is White Sox Weekly, your two-hour all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Drive in the air, deep to right, it is gone!
This is a presentation of the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Connor is in Cincinnati for tonight's game two between the White Sox and Cincinnati Reds. I'm Jesse Rogers. Second week in a row sitting in for Connor as he has play-by-play duties. He'll be along a couple hours from now for the Reds and the White Sox from Great American Ballpark. Darren Jackson alongside him. But I'm with you for the next couple hours. It's our weekly White Sox show right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network. Again, Jesse Rogers with you. 312-332-3776 is the phone number. I love doing this show. I like it better when the White Sox have a good week like they just had compared to me hosting this show a week ago. But the main reason I like doing this show is we have a little bit more room to discuss the White Sox and baseball in general than a quick pregame and postgame show, which I will be hosting later on as well. So 2 hours to talk some White Sox baseball, Major League Baseball with you right here on ESPN 1000. I'm in Chicago. Connor McKnight, Darren Jackson in Cincinnati. They'll be along in just a little bit. 312-332-3776, the number. If you're too lazy to pick up the phone, you can tweet me at Jesse Rogers ESPN. But when you host a solo show, you like to talk to people. You don't want to just talk to yourself. But feel free to tweet if you can't call, at Jesse Rogers ESPN. And we're going to talk about a lot of things here, from the Wander Franco flip the ball to himself and throw to first, to everything that's gone on with the White Sox over the last week. A much better week of baseball than we saw the previous one. They get off the schneid, if that's what you want to call it, after a 10-game losing streak in a dramatic way last Sunday with that incredible ninth inning comeback. They followed up with a couple wins against the Twins. They win last night. And in between, they lose that extra inning game on Thursday, or else it would have been a 5-game win streak after that 10-game losing streak. And I think it was the baseball gods reminding everybody, it's not going to be that easy. We're not going to let you go lose 10 and then win 7, 8, or 10 in a row. We're still going to make it hard on you to climb out of this hole that you've created for yourself. So, yes, they win 4 of 5, could have easily been 5 in a row, so many chances in extra innings in the ninth inning on Thursday against the Twins, but they dropped that one. Come back with a real nice win yesterday, 5-4 in game one of the series against the Reds. Luis Robert, huge in that game. And boy, do they need this guy to show up, frankly, more often than he has. I've been critical of Luis Robert at the beginning of this season so far. Obviously, that first week he had was great, but then there was a huge lull. The jog to first base that got him pulled, but he hits a huge go-ahead home run in the sixth, and then he starts a double play in the ninth, catching the ball in center field and firing a strike to double off a runner at first base, really closed out that game last night. He did not miss that fastball in the sixth inning. He put it out to right center field. Great job by him, and great job by Elvis Andrus 1 inning earlier to tie the game with a 3-run shot. That old guy still has some moves in his game, huh? So that was the offense. Elvis Andrus 3-run shot, Luis Robert with the 2-run shot, and the White Sox came away with a game one victory. If they win one of the next two, they'll have won their second series in a row and second series of the season. So maybe things are turning a little bit. But the question I have for you right off the bat is, can they get back in it, or is all lost? Is all lost this early in May, or can they get back in it? History would say it's really difficult for a team that's dug this kind of a hole, even this early in the season, to make the playoffs. It just doesn't happen often. I can give you the teams that have done it. It's a short list. However, we are in a different era with an extra wild card team as of last season and in a division which has perennially been not so good, or annually been not so good, right? The AL Central isn't a division that you need 100 wins to take it, right? It's closer to 90. Now, even for the Sox to get to 90 is difficult, but at least there's a chance. At least there's a chance, whereas if the Sox resided in another division, maybe not so much. They're 11-22 right now, 8 games out of first, Minnesota and Cleveland are playing each other, so there's a chance to gain on both those teams, or one or the other team each day if the Sox keep winning over the Reds this weekend. There are three teams ahead of them. Detroit's playing really good baseball right now at 14 and 17. The Twins are the only team over 500 in the division at 19 and 14. Detroit 14 17, Cleveland 14 and 18, the White Sox 11 and 22. It's not a pretty division. It's not a pretty division. But who cares? It's a winnable one. That's all we care about. Can they get back in it? Has the last week given you any hope at all? It's not shocking that after a 10-game losing streak, they'd go on a little bit of a run the other way, right? This is not a rebuilding team with no talent. Baseball is a weird sport. It's a sport of runs. And most of the time, after a long win streak, you give it back a little bit. And after a long losing streak, you gain some of it back. So I'm not surprised by this week at all. Not surprised by it. Can it continue enough to really get them back in the race? What do you think? 312-332-3776. And here's a question. If they can get back in it, what's the X factor to you? What's the X factor to you? Who is the X factor? Is there a player? Is there a part of their game that is kind of the thing that it'll all hinge on? I'm gonna cross off one X factor right off the bat so you can't use it. And that's health. That's health. If there's anyone in this entire city in the media that has told you over and over again what this team does with Tim Anderson in the starting lineup as opposed to without him, I think I'm the only one that talks about it. Because it really, one player shouldn't affect your record that much. But it is striking how different this team is with him and without him. And you don't need the numbers to tell you. Just watch them. They just don't have that energy. They don't have the defense. They don't have the offense when he's out. Now, a lot of that makes sense because he's the starting shortstop and leadoff man. So take that out of the mix and you've got some problems. So health, especially Tim Anderson's health, to me is the X factor. But it really has been for this team for 2 or 3 years, right? But I'm going to be very specific about it and say as long as Tim Anderson is in the lineup, this team has a chance. They are 152 and 112, 40 games over 500. When he's in the lineup since the beginning of 2020. That's incredible when you consider all the ups and downs this team has had over the last couple of years. But part of that reason is because he's been out of the lineup. Keep him healthy, and the Sox will always have a chance, in my opinion, even above Eloy, Luis, or Yoan Moncada. What's your X factor? Can they get back in it? Or is Rick Hahn already thinking about that trade deadline in your mind? I'm sure he's not thinking about it. He's thinking about getting back in it. Because you know how it works. If you're out of the race come July, free agents to be are going to be traded. That's just how it works. That's how you maximize a losing season. But we're not there yet. We're not there yet. Every single team in baseball is going to have its ups and downs. The White Sox had a down very early in the season. Very early in the season. So if they're only having one all season, all right, they got past it. It's over. But the fact that it happened so early still means there's plenty of time to have another bad one. But everybody's going to have a bad one. It's just a matter of how many bad ones are you going to have. And hopefully that was it for the White Sox. That was it. 312-332-3776, the number. All right, let me set up the rest of the show here. Chuck Garfine, pre- and post-game host on NBC Sports Chicago, is going to join me in about 7 minutes. Chuck knows the White Sox in and out, sits next to Ozzie Guillen, Frank Thomas. We'll talk about the show on TV. We'll talk about tonight's game. We'll talk about the start of the season. Chuck is as good as it gets at his gig. We will also hopefully talk to Billy Hamilton at about 3:30-ish, so about 20 minutes from now, right after Chuck. We hope to get Billy live on the line from Cincinnati. I mean, this guy's been thrown right into the mix. Fortunately, he's a veteran. He's been there. He's done that. He knows what he's doing. But he gets called up early in the week, and he is just – seems to be in every important situation. And when you consider the new rules, that's not surprising. He's probably going to be in a lot of important moments, especially in close games, whether it be defensively late, because this team does need some help defensively, and certainly on the base paths late in the game. He's already been inserted as a pinch runner a couple times. Extra innings, we've seen him start on second base because he made the last out the previous inning or as a pinch runner. So Billy Hamilton could have a bigger role than you would think, because the new rules allow for more stolen base attempts and more successful stolen bases. Let's not bury the lead to this whole week, though. yes, the White Sox played good baseball, but they're going to get an emotional lift and a baseball bullpen lift, I guess you could say, when Liam Hendricks returns to the mound. He did it last night in a Triple-A game, his first rehab outing. Nice clean inning by Hendricks, was solid. Got a nice ovation by the crowd, both teams. Pretty emotional moment in a rehab start. Just think what's going to happen when he takes the mound for the White Sox. Now, he still has three or four outings to do for Triple-A. Probably a back-to-back in there, right? But I'm just going to take a guess. I have no inside information on this. I'm pegging possibly the beginning of that homestand May 12th against the Astros for Liam's return, if not the 16th against the Guardians, Tuesday the 16th. Maybe he finishes his rehab like that Thursday or Friday, the 11th or 12th, gets a couple days off. The White Sox are off the 15th, and he's back in uniform the 16th. I think the 16th is the latest. Maybe earlier, depending on how, you know how he is. He'll run through a wall and say he's ready. So they've got to slow him down a little bit and make sure he's really ready to go. But how about that outing last night? Gets in the game, pitches a clean inning. The fans give him applause. In fact, the idea that both teams were cheering him kind of took some of his mojo away. Here's Liam Hendricks after his first rehab stint, recovering from cancer. He takes the mound, one inning for Triple-A Charlotte.
First game out, it was nice being in the bullpen, kind of getting that camaraderie going. It was great being in that kind of realm, but a little wet out here tonight, so that was always an interesting one, running in. But then got through my warm-up pitches, and then they made a PA announcement, and both teams kind of got out and started clapping, which don't get me wrong, is really, really nice, and I very much appreciate it. Maybe very emotional, but I'm a guy who pitches on anger. And it's really hard to get angry when you know that the other team's full of nice people that would do something like that. So that was a little tough to get locked in. And then being wet, I slipped on the first pitch and then had to kind of finagle my mechanics a little bit just to make sure that I was getting it down there all right. But hey, a clean inning is a clean inning with a scoreless and a strikeout. So that's always good.
Awesome to hear from Liam Hendricks. Awesome to see him on the mound. He did a Zoom with reporters after the game. Of course, he held that long press conference at Guaranteed Rate Field the other day with his teammates lined up in the back of the room. I was there. Just so cool to see him. I mean, looks like the same Liam Hendricks. Wouldn't know that what he went through. But boy, did he go through an ordeal beating lymphoma and everything that goes along with it to get back on the mound this quickly. Remember, he announced his diagnosis on January 9th publicly, although he was diagnosed back in December. And actually felt symptoms last June and July. He thinks he may have pitched through some of this stuff last season. And he didn't have the best second half. His ERA was one run higher last year. So in the second half than the first half. So he was dealing with something. And now he's back on the mound. We will play a good chunk of Liam Hendricks from that press conference in case you missed it. We all need feel-good stories. And Liam's return is certainly a feel-good. Stay out of the elements this season. Located on the 200 level behind home plate, the Guaranteed Rate Club offers all-inclusive food and beverage, in-seat service, and complimentary parking. Plans start at 20 games. For more information, visit whitesox.com/GRC or call or text 312-674-1000. Let's slide a call in a great White Sox fan before we take a break and get Chuck Garfine online. It's Ron on the South Side. What's happening, Ron?
Man, I've been listening to you for so
long time.
Many years. Long, long time. Real quick, Jesse, but I think they can get back into it when you look at the division. But here's my question. You got to get Dylan Cease back on track. But when this, the quote-unquote, the rebuild start, the main person was Yoan Moncada. Luis Robert is kind of coming around. We know what Tim Anderson, some other guy, but that's still the plan. But then now here's my other question, though, Jesse, when hopefully he comes back, and then hopefully, because you need Jake Burgos back in there. So what would you do with Jake Burgos? How does he fit in? But I think the team is good enough. Got to play a little better defense and, Jim Hendricks looks good last night. It's still going to start with the pitching, but hopefully they can get back in it. So
yeah, but you're saying Moncada's kind of your X factor. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, because and again, if you remember, even before Luis Robert, he was the one that was projected to be a 5-2 player. He was the centerpiece when they made the big trade with Boston, and we just still haven't seen it, though. Just in 19, I think it was in 19, we saw what, but he can come back because he can play offensively and defensively. So I think that'll really be a big plus if he comes back. So, to answer your question, I think they can kind of get back because the division is not going to get away from them. So always a pleasure, Justin.
Thank you. I appreciate the phone call. I agree that you kind of got to keep Jake Berger's bat in the lineup. Use the DH spot if you have to here and there. I mean, obviously that's Eloy's spot. It's not a perfect situation. Berger doesn't play a ton of other positions, right? I think you figure that out when you cross that bridge when you come to it. Both guys are hurt right now. So you'll figure it out. There's always an opening somewhere because on this team especially, but on every team in baseball, there's you're one day away from a new injury. So if the whole team's healthy, that's the best problem Pedro Grifol and Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and Jerry Reinsdorf could possibly have. But we haven't seen the whole team healthy in a few years. So I don't disagree with you about Berger, but you figure it out when you need to. All right, Chuck Garfine, NBC Sports pre- and post-game host, joins me in a moment. This is White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers here with you until 5, and then I'll have the pregame show. Connor McKnight has the play-by-play from Cincinnati. He'll be sitting alongside Darren Jackson and sitting inside the NBC Sports studios. I assume it's Ozzy, maybe Ozzy and Frank. I don't know. It's a cast of characters. Maybe Beckham's in there. Who knows? But I know one guy will be in there, and he'll tell us who's sitting next to him tonight, and that is the one, the only, Chuck Garfine, and he joins me right here on White Sox Weekly. Chuck, good afternoon. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing good, Jesse. It is myself and Ozzy Guillen, Oswaldo Guillen, on the pregame show and postgame show tonight at 5 o'clock. We got the pregame show.
I mean, it almost makes me want to, like, simulcast the postgame show. I guess I should say if they lose, because that's when Ozzy is at his best. But I have my own postgame show to do. So for those on the radio, I'll be with you. For those watching on TV, Ozzy and Chuck will be with you. I mean, I guess that's like the little nugget you get if you're upset when they lose. You get Ozzy to explain it all to us. And I'm going to start with an easy one for you, Chuck. What does he say off the air? Because on the air, he just lets it fly when things don't go well. I can only imagine what he's like off the air. Probably the same, knowing Ozzy.
Yeah, well, if we were to air what is said off the air, it would be one giant beep. It would never end. It would just be beep, 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 beep. It would be like a song of beeps.
That's funny. That's good stuff. He really is emotional and passionate about it. It's great. You guys got a great pre- and post-game show. All right, let's get right to it. A much better week, Chuck, than the week before. I'm not just saying this because we're on White Sox Weekly. I think this is definitely closer to the team that we thought they'd be and think they could be going forward. That doesn't mean they're going to win the World Series, but it means, there was some just normal, better baseball this week than what we saw the previous 10 days. And I think if you want to feel like the glass is half full, you're not wrong in doing that. What's your assessment when you take the 10-game losing streak and then add on these last five games?
All right, so I try to give a 30,000-mile-away view of what I was watching, what was happening. And what I saw, especially during the 10-game losing streak, was you're facing – really, really good teams. It started with, I think it was game two maybe of the doubleheader with the Phillies. I'm trying to remember how it started, but you had three games in Tampa, three games in Toronto, four at home against the Rays. And they had to just keep their head above water. You know, if you're going to lose three out of four, two out of three, that's not good, but don't lose 10 in a row.
Right.
And when we saw the schedule for the month of April, it was a daunting schedule on paper, and the White Sox played, I would say, it ranged from okay baseball to bad baseball. And if you do that in a soft schedule, you'll probably come out to be about 500 or a little bit worse. But when you play okay to bad baseball for a month against this schedule that they faced and the way these teams were playing against them, you ended up going, whatever it was, 7-21, an awful start to the season. I'm not making an excuse for them. They should have played better. But the schedule was not helping the fact that they did not play good for the first month. So now that they're through the toughest part of the schedule, I would say for the whole season, I'm not saying it gets easier all the way. They just now, they're starting to find who they are, find out what their identity is. They're starting to get healthier, and they got to string some wins together. You got to win this series. You got to win the next one against the Royals and just keep this thing going. It's been the toughest April I can remember of my life. Maybe 1984, it would be the only comparison when they were coming off the division title. I mean, they've had bad Aprils before, but when you have expectations like this and you perform like this, that is really frustrating, and that's kind of how I feel about what the Sox did and where they're at right now.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I really do. It was a perfect storm of them playing poorly at a bad time against a team having an historic start, because seven of those games were against the Rays. You add all that up, and that's why you end up losing 10 in a row. I mean, they made their own bed, there's no doubt, but I think you bring up some good points here. And playing them all without Tim Anderson. I mean, it's just, they cannot win when Tim Anderson is out of the lineup. It's amazing how consistent that has been since 2020.
And also,
the starting shortstop on leadoff man.
Yeah, and we've kind of forgotten. I mean, everyone knows that Liam Hendricks has been out. But, you know, how many times has the bullpen messed things up? And it might have been a little different if Hendricks was in the ninth and everyone else was back in inning, right? And they should have won. They could have easily won the first two games in Tampa, but the bullpen, obviously, with Ronald Lopez, blew one game, and he's given up six home runs this year. Last year, he gave up one. So I know they're trying Lopez in the closer spot. I don't think he has what it takes to be in the closer. He has closer stuff, but when you're giving up six home runs already and it's early May, you can't have your closer do that. So I think, you know, getting Liam back and he's on his way, that's going to help his team out a lot. But, yeah, T.A. Losing him, that's another one.
Yeah, I think those are great points, Chuck. Visiting with Chuck Garf from NBC Sports Chicago. I think Ronaldo Lopez is the latest example of the difference between normal leverage and ninth inning high leverage. There is a big difference there. And Steve Stone has talked about this over the years as well. And everyone has, really. I mean, the ninth inning is a different animal for a reason. Lopez, great arm, great stuff. Not ready for prime time every single night. Yes, of course he's going to have to pitch in some high leverage, but they had him in high leverage. I looked at it the other day. I mean, he's already tripled the high leverage situations he's ever been in almost. So, because of course he was a starter for a lot of years. So he's just learning his way. In 2 years, maybe he would be the closer, maybe even next year. But yeah, tough spot. And if I would be critical of Rick Kahn, it would be like Liam Hendricks announces cancer and you didn't really cover his spot in any way, or the trickle down effect of, okay, if we're going to move Lopez up to the ninth, well, who's going to do the eighth, seventh, sixth? You know what I mean? Like, they just never addressed the loss of Hendricks personnel wise, roster wise, and it really came back to haunt them. But you know, seeing Tim Anderson back in the lineup, seeing Luis Robert in some ways bottom out with that jog to first, and now come back and have the game that he had last night, like, if you want to find the positive, you can start to find it, because this last week has been better baseball. What's the X factor for you? That was how I started the show, and you can't use health. You could say Liam Hendricks. I mean, that could be the X factor, but it can't just be health, because that's too easy.
The X factor for what? For why they're playing better now?
Moving forward, what's sort of the thing that everything will hinge on other than health?
You know, you can go all over the place, but I would just say one thing that Pedro keeps bringing up, and that is chase rate, plate, discipline.
Like that. Yeah.
That's a big one for them. I mean, they're just chasing and chasing. The book on this team is in bold letters with Sharpie. Like, get these guys to chase and they'll swing.
Yeah.
Robert isn't doing it as much. Jimenez isn't doing it as much, but, you know, Sosa and Andrews. So actually, Andrews is starting to get some walks, but yeah, it's been pretty bad. And I think if you improve that, that will help. The walks, by their pitching staff. That's another one. It's funny. They lead the majors. Their pitching staff leads the majors in strikeouts. They have 11 more than the Twins, but they have the second most walks. So it's kind of, they're all over the place with, you know, it looks really good, and then it looks really bad. But, yeah, I think chase rate, you get better plate discipline, and, you know, it's easier said than done. The history with a lot of these players, it doesn't jump off the page for plate discipline, but they got to be as good as they can possibly be, because it goes a long way, because they got to swing at pitches that they can really hit and not chase, and there's been way too much chasing.
I think that's a great point. That if that number starts to come down a little bit, if they rank, they don't have to go from ranking
middle,
like 29.
Middle of the pack.
Yeah, middle of the pack. That'll change a lot. I mean, Luis Robert's home run yesterday, I mean, you can't get a fastball by him. That's why he's so great, because he'll destroy any mistake. But it's like the good curveball outside the zone or the slider that he's got to lay off of. So when he gets a pitch to hit, we know he's going to hit it. But he's got to learn to lay off the bad pitches, and a bunch of them do. But I feel like Robert's at the top of that list. All right, Chuck, anything special about pre tonight? Anything we need to know, or just business as usual with you and Ozzy?
Well, it's always special. Special. What we are going to show is a little interview I did with Elvis Andrews a couple of days ago, where I asked him about the jacket and fedora that they're wearing in the dugout after they hit a home run. So what happened with that was, because you're seeing them start to wear it, they literally were like, they wanted to get something, like, this is something that Elvis thinks about. Like, we need something that's going to help unite us, make it fun. It brings good chemistry, and you see other teams do this. So they literally went on the internet and Googled what Chicago is known for. These guys have lived in Chicago, but they don't really fully know all the history.
Right.
So he's like, you know what, we could do something with pizza. We could have done something with the weather. We could have done something. What else is there? There's a few other ideas that they had. But then
they went with Al Capone?
So they looked up Al Capone, but you know what? Like, in this politically incorrect or politically correct world, excuse me, people could take this the wrong way. But I kind of like it, because you know what he said? He goes, you know what? We need an edge. We got to play like gangsters. And like, when I heard that, I'm like, you know what? I like it. So they are basically playing like a bunch of gangsters. And don't take it too far and think, well, it symbolizes violence. It just, you know, come on, let's have some fun. It's baseball. It's funny when they wear this little suit. And so he'll say on the pregame show how much he really, really, really wanted to wear that jacket, because he hadn't had a home run all year, and then he had a three-run homer last night.
Well, it's funny. That's a great explanation. I look forward to the interview. And last night, we're watching the game. My wife says, why are they dressing like a pimp? So send your letters to her. Send your letters to her. But she said that. So, I mean, everybody's got their thing. And you're right. Take it in good fun. We know it. Play like gangsters, not be gangsters. We get it, you know.
They're literally just, they want to play like gangsters.
Right.
That's what they're doing. So that's what it is. I think it's great. We've been calling for some kind of celebration in the dugout. They've got one now. Is it the best one in baseball? No, but they got one. I like it.
Well, for a while, they couldn't celebrate anything. So let's just be happy with it, that there's something that they're doing, putting on, whatever the case may be. So, all right, Chuck. Well, I won't be watching tonight because I'll be doing my own pregame show, but I'm sure you'll have a good one.
Well, I hope you have a good one, too.
You got it.
You know, here's what I hope. For both of us, it's a winning edition of the postgame show. We always want those.
Yes, definitely. Thanks for your time, Chuck.
All right. See you, Jesse. Right. Bye-bye.
That's Chuck Garfine, NBC Sports Chicago pre- and postgame with Ozzie Guillen. I'll have the pre- and postgame right here on the White Sox Radio Network starting at 5 o'clock. But we're talking White Sox baseball. Up until then, we expect to hear from one Billy Hamilton. I figured, you know what? It's Derby Day. Let's get one of the fastest players in baseball on with me, and we will do that. He's been thrown right into the mix. He's going to join me in about 20 minutes now. He's warming up over in Cincinnati, where the Reds and White Sox will play. First pitch set for 5:40. But Billy Hamilton scheduled to join me in about 20 minutes. You're going to hear from Mike Huff. Mike Huff's going to join me. He's a frequent guest on White Sox Weekly. We'll talk to him about what's going on with White Sox youth baseball. And you will hear from Liam Hendricks, who pitched last night in a rehab start. Had that press conference at Guaranteed Rate Field. Of course, beat cancer. He's back on the field. and we'll hear from him during this show as well. But we're always taking your phone calls at 312-332-3776. This is White Sox Weekly. I'm Jesse Rogers on ESPN 1000.
Greeny, 10 to noon weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
Jesse Rogers with you on White Sox Weekly as we continue on here on this Saturday afternoon. Don't forget White Sox and Reds coming up 2 hours from now. First pitch at about 5:40. Connor McKnight will have the play-by-play with Darren Jackson. Join us at Guaranteed Rate Field next Saturday, May 13th, as the White Sox take on the Houston Astros at 6:15 p.m. The first 20,000 fans will receive an Eloy Jimenez Hi Mom talking bobblehead presented by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. 312-332-3776 is the number. Asking a simple question to you. Can they get back in it, or is all lost in your mind? If they had lost 10 games in a row in June or July and been this far out, different story. But it did happen early enough that you can convince yourself they got a shot. You can convince yourself, especially if they have weeks like they just had, 4-1 since ending that 10-game streak. Do you think they can get back in it? They're 8 out with 3 teams ahead of them with tons of time left. And what is your X factor? I stole the health one. I said, look, Tim Anderson being on the field is my X factor. He's got to stay on the field. Chuck said they've got to stop chasing just a little bit. Stop chasing inside the zone, outside the zone, excuse me. Make the pitchers come in the zone. You saw what Luis Robert did yesterday in the sixth inning. Got a pitch he could hit, put it out of the ballpark. That's how you get pitchers to come in the zone, when you stop chasing. Because until you prove that you'll stop, they'll keep throwing it out there. They'll keep throwing it out there. So that was Chuck Garfine's X factor. What's your X factor moving forward? Could be a part of their game. Could be a specific player. You can't use health. That's too easy. I took the easy route. Tonight, it is Mike Clevinger on the mound. He's been okay. Don't love some of the trends. He's not throwing strikes as much as he needs to. But he's been okay. Had a good first couple starts. A little wonky since. He needs to throw more strikes. I had a chance the other day to talk to Mike Clevinger about his start to the season. Think he's still trying to lock in. But I think he's been serviceable so far. And if he locks in, I think he'll be a whole lot better. Here's Mike Clevinger, myself, a couple days ago in the White Sox locker room.
First of all, tell me how you think you've pitched so far. What have you done well? What have you wanted to work on?
I think just work on really just mindset while I'm out there. I think there's times where I fell into funks where I was internally thinking, internalizing everything, and so my external focus wasn't there, so I wasn't really competing, and I think that might be probably one of my best traits is how I can compete on the mound. But when I'm inside my head thinking about mechanics and maximizing pitches, then starts execution starts failing.
Some of the numbers that I've looked at, strike percentage, first strike percentage, a little bit down for you. Finding the strike zone in general, a little bit down for you. Is that something you got to work on, just get that first strike over?
Yeah, I mean, we're still early on. So, I mean, I think it's going to play, like, balance itself out. But, yeah, I think, again, that just goes back to just internalizing. I think last start I went out there and just didn't look up at the radar gun, didn't look up at the numbers. And, you know, I was there competing every single pitch and think ahead basically most of the starts. So I think if I can stay in that mindset and keep the work in between starts, we'll be in a good spot.
I once had a pitcher tell me he needs 100 innings to really feel good. I'm like, that's half the season. Yeah. What does it take for you? Is 100 sound like a lot, or is that really about the right number for a pitcher?
I mean, you're talking, you know, 25, 26 spring training. Yeah, I'd say it takes a few starts. I'd say at least the 10-start marker to really start syncing up well. So however many innings you can cover in those 10 starts, sure. I'd say about that marker.
And when you feel right, what does it feel like on the mound? Can you know that day I'm feeling like it's locked in?
Yeah. It's again, you hear a lot of people talk about the flow state. That's where it is, where you're almost like working on a subconscious, where you're just kind of in the moment for every single pitch. You're not worried about, you know, what happened last. We're not worried about pitch execution as much. Like, you just know that's going to be there. It's more of a, like, just really just syncing the body up. Once the body gets synced up, it maps itself and learns it. But, I mean, again, you got to go out there each start and have your body kind of relearn that syncing to get synced up again based on intensity, mound, how your body's feeling that week, and stuff like that.
What's prep like for a team like the Reds outside the division, that kind of thing? Not that you've been in this division that long since you were in San Diego, but what's it like facing the Reds for the only time?
Oh, I mean, I know a lot of those boys over there. I was with Cleveland for so long, so we had the Ohio Cup every year. But, No, it's the same for every team. I mean, it's not any different. I mean, you get a scouting report after the last outing. I get the red scouting report and then start diving into that, look at some of the hitters' videos, kind of look at their trends, and then see where my stuff's playing, and then kind of map it out with Yaz or Seb, whoever's got me.
Tell me, health wise, you know, after last year, are you feeling really good about where you are right now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm getting a pitch on two legs now, so that's a plus.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, that was Mike Clevinger a couple days ago. He'll face the Reds tonight. Nick Lodolo on the mound for Cincinnati. We know traditionally the White Sox have beaten up on left-handed pitching, and he has had a rough few starts. He started out great. He's a good young pitcher for the Reds. Should have a bright future with Hunter Green, but he's gone through some rough moments just in the last couple weeks. Hopefully that continues if you're a White Sox fan. Jesse Rogers with you. Let's go to the phone lines. Jim's in Racine, and you're on ESPN 1000. Jim, what's up?
Hi. Well, to answer your question, or try to, I don't think there's any doubt that the White Sox can get back in this. I mean, it's only May, early May. If they win a few series, they'll be four back by the All-Star break, and then it's anybody's game from that point once they get to that point. Now, they have to play a lot better, that's for sure, but, you know, I don't know. I think it's easy, and if they play better, they could be right in it, but they're going to have to play better.
Yeah, it's crazy how the divisions stack up. I mean, the Toronto Blue Jays are in fourth place in the AL East. They're 19-14, eight games out. The White Sox are 11-22 and eight games out. So it's nuts. They're fortunate to be in the right division, right, Jim?
Right. You know, and again, I just don't think, as you said a minute ago, we're lucky that it's only May. If it were August, it'd be different, but they've got plenty of time. But again, they have to play better. And I think they will. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, this last week.
I think every team has a bad streak once a season, and we have ours out of the way. And, you know, I don't think they're going to lose 10 games in a row again. I think they might win 10 games in a row.
Yeah, but the problem is they can't even lose 8 out of 10 in a row, or else they'll be sunk. So you're right. They had their one. That's what I said at the top of the show. They can't have another one anything close to that while hoping that Cleveland and Minnesota do. But it's not like Cleveland's record's all that great. Minnesota is a nice 19-14. You'd rather be there. Look, if they play like they have the last week, they have a shot to get back in it. I think we both agree with that.
Great.
Yeah. Jim, thanks for the call. All right. That was Jim from Racine. We'll take more of your phone calls, 312-332-3776, the number. But we're hoping to talk to Billy Hamilton as he gets ready for the game tonight, Reds and White Sox, right here on ESPN 1000. First pitch at 5:40. I'll start the official pregame show for you at 5 o'clock. We'll talk to Mike Huff next hour. And again, Billy Hamilton in a few minutes. Bring your family to a White Sox game with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Your family will get one ticket, hot dog, drink, and chips to select games starting at $19 per ticket. Plus, with every purchase, you have a chance to win mobile gasoline for a year. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. This is White Sox Weekly. My name is Jesse Rogers, sitting in for Connor McKnight. He's got the play-by-play. We hope to talk to Billy Hamilton in a few moments. Stay tuned. This is ESPN 1000.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play AM FM HD and app.
Okay, welcome back to White Sox Weekly. We have some breaking news that we will try to track down more on, but Eloy Jimenez sent to the hospital with abdominal pain. This is according to Pedro Grifol. He had some discomfort Friday night, was sent to the hospital this morning. So hopefully he's okay. Eloy Jimenez sent to the hospital in Cincinnati. That's always going to be a serious situation. And I would, you know, hope that he's okay, but we'll try to get an update on that for you. And certainly Connor and DJ, who are on the scene, can update us as well. Maybe we can get Connor on, guys, and just get an update on that. He is not obviously in the starting lineup, which has Tim Anderson leading off, Vaughn, Robert, Grandel, Benintendi, Alberto is at third, Andrews at second, Zavala's catching, Hazley in right field. So no Eloy Jimenez in tonight's game as he was sent to the hospital with abdominal pain this morning. 312-332-3776 is the phone number. Hoping good thoughts for Eloy, as they certainly need him. But first and foremost, we just have to hope he's okay and it's nothing too serious. But anytime you hear a player being sent to the hospital, that's not a good thing. So maybe we can get Connor or DJ on the line, give us a little bit more information before the end of White Sox Weekly here. 312 332 3776 is the number. Man, the Sox just can't get any luck when it comes to injuries. It's just been crazy, absolutely crazy, these last couple years with them. Maybe there's some injuries that have been preventable, but certainly there's been a portion of them that have been fluky, and they seem to all revolve around Eloy a lot of the times. You know, the pectoral one going over the fence. This one obviously is probably a flukish thing. Hopefully, again, not too serious. We'll talk to Billy Hamilton shortly. Maybe he can give us a little update as well on Eloy. And again, he's not in the starting lineup. Speaking of injuries and returning from what you'd call a terrible one, meaning cancer, Liam Hendricks back on the mound last night. He made his first rehab stint appearance. I was about to say start, he didn't start the game. One rehab appearance, and he'll have three or four more, maybe a back-to-back in there before he returns. Afterwards, he talked about what a surprise it was for Gwinnett, the opposing team, to be celebrating him.
I was having this conversation with my wife the other day because I was like, okay, I don't kind of quite get it, but no, she's like, no, you have to understand how big this is for a lot of people, how big this is for a lot of people going through this. I have family members going through this. This is more about like, oh, you missed 6 weeks. It's more about you overcoming something extreme. And then what you getting back on a mound so quickly represents to a lot of people who are going through this right now. And that's something that you really have to reflect on, because it's a lot bigger than just me. But no, I definitely appreciated that. And yeah, it's something that will follow me around for a little bit, I'm sure. And I just want to make sure that I make a positive impact and make sure that I do right by everybody who's currently battling through this and going through treatments, or just finished treatments as a family member going through it. And I always have to take a step back and realize that it's not about the timeline you're at. It's about what you're going through and what you can represent to a lot of people.
That was Liam Hendricks last night. Of course, it's about the inspiration, right? I mean, when an athlete does this very publicly, because they all have to do this publicly, that's their job, and recovers as quickly as he did, it doesn't mean the next guy's going to recover that quickly, but they can be inspired by that, inspired by the attitude he took going into it and what he did coming out of it. All of that plays a part. Celebrate Mother's Day with us at the ballpark next Sunday, May 14th, as the White Sox take on the Houston Astros at 1:10. First 20,000 fans will receive a White Sox belt bag presented by Rush, a proud supporter of breast cancer awareness. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Let's get back to Liam Hendricks, because we are waiting a phone call from Billy Hamilton. That's going to come at about the top of the hour. Looking forward to talking to Billy. So he went one inning last night. Did he want a second inning? Here's Liam.
Oh, God, no. Not just yet. I'm just happy to have an inning where I get three outs at this stage. So whether it be nine pitches, I mean, my first outing, I threw 22 pitches. So I think 22, and then I think the next one was 17. So we're trending in the right direction. So hopefully the next one will be lower than nine. And as I said, it's the toughest thing is never the pitch count for me. It's about getting loose, getting in, getting out, and then That's usually where it goes. It's never the amount of pitches. I mean, as Pedro had said, I was throwing 40 pitch bullpens, because if you do get deep into the weeds of an inning, you need to have the stamina to be able to throw that 40th pitch as being your most important pitch you're going to throw that inning. So nine pitches is all good for me right now, and hopefully I can continue being clean and scoreless and quick pitch innings, and that bodes well for recovery.
All right, Liam Hendricks last night. Yeah, he's not ready for a second inning, and why would he be? Because he's rarely going to do that in the regular season unless we get down to September, probably. The bigger key is probably back-to-back days, and I imagine that's usually for a reliever the last hurdle. So I would assume he'll get back-to-back appearances. I'm just making this assumption. I don't know for sure. Probably next week, sometime late next week maybe, or middle of the next week, and then he'll get a couple days off and return to the White Sox at that point. That's usually the last hurdle, but obviously every pitcher is different. Every rehab stint is different. Now, more about his game last night. I mean, he's about velocity, right? When his velocity is on, that probably means he's close to returning. So here's cut five, Liam Hendricks last night on his velocity.
I don't know what the velo was. I was somewhat looking, but somewhat not trying to, because one, I was too busy trying to, first time using the pitch clock, trying to make sure that I had my cleats cleaned and all that sort of stuff. There was, I rushed a little bit just to get through that because of it being wet and all this, but Yeah, I'm not sure what it was tonight. I got a swing and miss on a fastball. I got some weak contact on sliders, so that's all I'm really really looking for. Like, velo's great and all this sort of stuff, but currently it's how it comes out and how the hitters take it. And as of tonight, like, I wouldn't have been surprised if I was very firm, but you just never know.
Well, the team knows. They've got a radar gun on him, and it's not everything, but it's a good indication that your arm is live and in shape and you're ready to rock and roll. I mean, if he's throwing 90 instead of 95 or 95 instead of 99, that makes a difference. In any case, that was Liam Hendricks last night. We'll play some of his press conferences, his press conference from the other day at Guaranteed Rate Field, where his teammates were in the room with a ton of media in there. And we'll just get the whole picture of his return after beating cancer. His announcement came on January 9th, and here we are just short of 4 months, and he's back on the mound. He was at Guaranteed Rate Field and then went out, joined AAA Charlotte as they take on Gwinnett this weekend. He'll do that for a few more days, a week or so, and then he'll be back with the White Sox, hopefully in short order. Let's pause 10 seconds for station ID.
Live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
This is WMVP WSHE-HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right, we will take a break, come back, hopefully talk to Billy Hamilton and get more information on this Eloy Jimenez news. He was hospitalized this morning with abdominal pain. We'll find out more from everybody on site in Cincinnati. Jesse Rogers with you. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
All right, hour number two of White Sox Weekly. Let's reset things here. Jesse Rogers with you from downtown Chicago. We've got the Reds and White Sox tonight, about an hour and 40 minutes from first pitch. Connor McKnight is in Cincinnati. He's got the play-by-play, so that's why I'm sitting in with it for him during White Sox Weekly here. And also, I'll have the pregame and postgame show for you as the White Sox try to continue their winning ways. They're 4-1 over their last five after losing 10 in a row, and they were this close to winning that fifth game on Thursday. Nice little five-game win streak. But instead, they're 4-1. As I mentioned at the top of the show, it's almost like the baseball gods said to the White Sox, we're not going to make it that easy on you. We're not going to let you win five in a row after losing 10 in a row. You got to earn it. And so they failed to win that extra inning game against the Twins on Thursday. But they have played good baseball. Winners of 4 or 5 and won a nice game last night, 5-4, as Elvis Andrus and Luis Robert went deep. And the bullpen held on late. Nice little double play started by Luis Robert in the ninth inning as well. So some good baseball this week, which was preceded by some bad baseball, as the schedule did light up a little bit here as well. Jesse Rogers with you, 312-332-3776. We're following this story tonight, this storyline. Eloy Jimenez hospitalized this morning with abdominal pain. Here's what Pedro Grifol had to say, the audio courtesy of my buddy Darryl Van Scowen of the Sun-Times, who's in Cincinnati. Here's Pedro.
Is there a day off for Eloy?
Nope.
How's he doing?
Nope. He had some abdominal pain last night. It intensified throughout the night. And this morning, you know, we took him to the hospital for further evaluation. He's still there. We should know something, you know, here shortly, or either before the game or during the game.
It's kind of scary, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it is, of course. Every time you got to go in with abdominal pain, it is. Hopefully, you know, things turn out okay, and we'll get some news here either before or during the game.
You know if it's anything he's ever experienced before on a lower level?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, I talked to him this morning, and he just said, you know, it hurts when I move, and, you know, obviously I wasn't the first guy to talk to. I was probably the last one. Our doctors and trainers were calling him. But it got intensified a little bit, so they just, you know, again, erring on the side of caution, they took him in and see what it is, what bad we had.
Oh, there you go. That's Pedro Grifol talking about Eloy Jimenez taken to the hospital. They don't have an update. They're hoping for something in game. I mean, it is kind of scary on its surface, but hopefully it could also not be serious, right? We just don't know. And boy, has this guy gone through the gamut of injuries and ailments. I guess this isn't so much an injury, but an ailment. I don't know if it's an illness. We'll find out. But it's just tough for him to stay on the field. But first and foremost, He's a human being who was sent to the hospital. Best wishes, of course, to Eloy Jimenez, as he won't play tonight, obviously. But, you know, who knows? It could be a one-day thing. Could be multiple days. You just don't know. The lineup without him is, again, Tim Anderson leading off. Andrew Vaughn, second playing first. Robert is in center. Grandel's DHing. Benintendi's in left. Alberto's at third. Andrews at second. Zavala catching. And Hazley is in right field. Hazley hitting .500. Maybe he had that nice game the other day. Really, really good job there. So both catchers in the lineup tonight, as Zavala will do the catching duties. Grandel is the DH. They have obviously a day game after night game tomorrow. So Grandel will more than likely be behind the plate. So that's how they'll do it without Eloy Jimenez. But hopefully he is okay. 312-332-3776. If you kind of want to comment on this latest issue with Eloy, we don't have much information. So there's not a lot more to say. Are they're just to shake your head with these things that pop up with this team. It's just so unfortunate, so unlucky in a lot of cases. You can't get your arms around it. What is going on? But you just hope for the best for Eloy. Luckily, and of course they have two third basemen now. I say luckily Tim Anderson came back, but both their third basemen are down. Jake Berger is on the IL, and obviously Yoan Moncada has had that back injury for quite a while, happened at the end of spring training, and he's hurting as well and on the injured list. 312-332-3776, the number. Hey, I want to bring up something just off topic as we wait for Billy Hamilton to call in, because I can't believe this created such a stir, and maybe it's just in the online world, right? There's the real world, and then there's the online world. So I want you to get your take on the White Sox, Eloy's latest ailment. If you think they can get back in the race, that was the question I asked last hour. But everybody, I think, saw that Wander Franco play. Tampa Bay Rays, great shortstop earlier this week against the Pirates a couple days ago. He fielded a ground ball, routine ground ball, and he kind of flipped the ball up to himself before throwing it to first base. Got the guy in plenty of time. Little hot dog in it. Flipped it up to himself, threw to first base. I didn't think anything of it. Okay, he's having some fun. It's kind of like a behind-the-back pass, whatever. Obviously, if he drops the ball, just like a behind-the-back pass that goes out of bounds, you're going to make fun of the guy, right? And maybe his manager would come down on him. But he didn't drop the ball. He threw it to first. And it feels like there's a portion of the world out there that is all down on Wander Franco for doing this. And on White Sox Weekly here, we have time to talk about anything and everything. I don't understand why anybody would be making fun of that. If he screws up, that's on him and his team. Who cares? He didn't screw up, and it turned out to be kind of a fun highlight. Tell me what I'm missing here. Are you people that old school, or just plain old that you can't, a guy can't have a little fun? He's so skilled that he can get away with it, I guess. Now, if he continues to push the envelope, maybe he'll make a mistake. But why is that any of our business? It'll be fun to see him make a mistake, unless you're a Rays fan, of course. So it's fun to see him make the play, and it'll be kind of funny if he drops the ball next time he does something like that. I don't understand why this would be an issue, but I guess in this world, internet world we live in, online world, social media, everything can be made an issue. Maybe I'm wrong, though. You tell me. 312-332-3776. You saw the play, right? Wander fields it, tosses up to himself, and then throws it to first. Big deal. No harm, no foul. I don't know what Kevin Cash said to him afterwards. I don't care. I don't think it's a big deal. You tell me. We'll take your phone calls on that in a few moments. But first, let's go to Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, where we have the speedy outfielder for the Chicago White Sox. His second stint with the White Sox. It's Billy Hamilton, the 11-year veteran. He is with us on White Sox Weekly. Billy, it's Jesse Rogers. Good to talk to you. I know we only have about 5 minutes. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing all good, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
You got it. You know, we just got this news. I don't know if you have an update, but how is your teammate Eloy Jimenez doing? We understand he went to the hospital. Anything you know about him? We're all praying that he's okay.
Oh, no. So I just got here, so I hadn't heard too much news about it and everything. So like I said, I hope everything is good. But like I said, we don't have any info of what's going on too much about it. But like I said, he's all in my prayers and everything. So I hope everything is great.
Absolutely. We hope so. All right. Your second stint with the White Sox, you've really been thrown into the deep end. And of course, since you've come up, they played good baseball. They had some problems before that. But talk about just being, you know, on second base a couple times with the winning run in that extra inning game, pinch running, trying to bunt to win the game. Does it feel like everything moved fast for you, or have you been around enough that, okay, this is baseball, I got to be ready to play?
Yeah, most definitely. Like I said, I've been around the game a long time, and like I said, the last few years, I've been playing this role to where I come in most of the time in the back end, so I kind of got like a little routine to where I can be prepared and kind of know what situations I be coming in. So it's something that I already knew coming up here what the situation was going to be. So it kind of worked out that those games that we had was close games to where I can get in there. So like I said, most of the time, if it's a close game, I'm going to be in there in a situation. So I was kind of excited for the first few days I was there and for it to happen. And like I said, winning is always great. Like, it's just about me coming over here and trying to do what I can to help the team win. Like I said, in any situation, like, but it's more like the team. Like, it's just like, I feel like we're back to having fun. That's the main thing about this game. The game is hard enough already, but for guys to come every day and be successful and play the game with a lot of fun and heart and hustle, it makes a big difference. So I'm excited about what we've been doing the past few days. And like I said, we just got to continue to keep getting better each and every day, and like I said, keep trying to get the wins.
Take me through the bottom of the ninth the other day. I know you wanted this one. The winning runs on third base, and you decide to try to lay down a bunt. Give me your thought process on that.
You know, like I said, I use my speed, so I knew it was two outs and everything. But still, if I can get the bunt down, like I said, the guy on third base, I know he can. He was gonna be able to score either way. But like I said, if I can get a good bunt down and still make it to first base, you know what I'm saying, we still get that winning run. So it's just something that I pulled out of my hat and everything. It's something that it's not a bad play if I get the bunt down and beat it out and get the winning run. I've seen it done multiple times where a guy bunts with two outs and actually get a run in. So like I said, it's just something that I thought about during the time of that bat. I didn't get it down. So it's something that I'm not beating myself about it. I mean, it's a situation that where I thought I could get it down and score a run. So it happened.
Yeah. Almost. That game was so close. Several chances in extra innings. You were on second a couple times. Let's talk about stealing bases with the new rules. I don't know if you remember this, but you and I talked for just a few minutes, like the first couple days of spring training, before we knew what this would look like. And you weren't sure. You weren't sure if you were going to have to peek at the clock, get a big lead off. Well, now you've played some games in the minors, now in the majors. What's it like trying to steal bases with the pitch clock?
You know, it's actually not as bad. You know, like I said, I still don't look at the clock as much as a lot of people do. I'm still more of like trying to read the pitcher and knowing like what the. I feel like the disengagements are the better. I mean, the bigger factor in mm-hmm. I think with stealing bases. So like I said, you only get two pickoffs back in the day when I was coming up and everything. You had guys that can pick off 10 to 15 times if they wanted to, you know. But now, mm-hmm. now it's more like, hey, you only get two, and that's what I'm saying. Like you don't want to use your two real quick, and then you have a whole at bat to get the bases. So now you can gotta have a little strategy with that. So I think I've kind of got a little strategy to where I can get a bag easier than in the past. So I just gotta keep working on it and keep getting better for sure.
When you were with Cincinnati, where you are now. Can you recall the most times a guy threw over to first base in one, you know, a one plate appearance or whatever while you're at first?
Oh yeah, I think it was around 11 times. I think it was 11. Like, I can't remember if I'm correct, but it was around at least 10 or 11 for sure. And that's why I was like, now you only get two, so now it's kind of like, okay, man, like, good, because I'm gonna do that the whole time. Look, and you already know they're trying to speed the game up, so picking off so many times can slow the game up. And you always hear when somebody pick off the crowd boos and stuff like that. So it's just like, you don't want to hear all those boos for 10 times in a row. So
I get tired just trying to slide back to first base, you know, every,
right,
11
exactly.
times.
That's the main thing. I'm getting kind of like older too. So, you know, I'm trying to stay off the ground as much as I can.
Yeah, no doubt. Billy, I know you have a little meeting there before the game. I appreciate it. An hour and a half before first pitch. Good to see you back in a White Sox uniform and doing your thing on the bases and in the outfield. We appreciate the time.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. That's Billy Hamilton, who was really a big part of this team these last few days. And he will be. I mean, Pedro Grifol said it right. It was a perfect time to bring him up. Maybe a perfect time a few weeks ago. They could have used him probably defensively in the outfield. But this was a good time to bring him up. A couple close games this week, and he's thrown in there as a pinch runner. He's trying to bunt. He's the guy on second in extra innings, playing some outfield. So value for guys like Billy Hamilton just shot up. I think we'd all agree with that. Just shot up with these new rules. Billy in his 11th year, and I think he has a job because of these new rules, to be honest. So good to hear from him. Doesn't have an update on Eloy Jimenez, who went to the hospital this morning with abdominal pain. We'll try to figure out what's going on there. Otherwise, maybe Connor or DJ mid-game will have an update. We'll hear from them in about, an hour and 15 minutes as they get set for first pitch. I'll have the official pregame show with for you at 5. Coming up, Mike Huff. Mike Huff, part of the White Sox family. He'll join me, talk about youth baseball this summer. It's around the corner. Stay tuned. This is White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network.
Carmen and Yurko, noon to 2 weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
All right, welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers sitting in for Connor McKnight. He'll have the play-by-play from Cincinnati along with Darren Jackson at 5:40. I'll have the official pregame show at 5, and of course I'll be here post-game as well to take your phone calls. Host your group from a view like no other in the CIBC Fan Deck. Located in center field, the Fan Deck sits above the field, providing an expansive view of the entire field and stadium. Enjoy a customizable food and beverage package. Visit whitesox.com/fandeck or call 312-674-1000 for more information. So you know the headline of the week, besides the White Sox going 4-1 and breaking that 10-game losing streak, the major headline is the return of Liam Hendricks to the ball field. He made his rehab start last night, but a couple days before that, he was at Guaranteed Rate Field and held a press conference, his first press conference, his first public comments since announcing cancer back on January 9th and since beating cancer a few weeks ago. We figured we'd bring back a chunk of that so you can, if you missed it, you can sort of understand what Liam has gone through and what he feels like right now in terms of his baseball abilities and how his world has been impacted by all this. Here's Liam Hendricks talking to reporters for the first time a couple days at Guaranteed Rate Field.
So as all of you know, I got diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma. I announced it on January 8th. It happened a little bit before that with my wife and I when we found out, but we kind of announced it once we got the clarification. So we found out early December, and then we progressed through the ranks to figure out what stage it was, the degree, what treatments, plans we had in place. So technically, I was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and started treatment on January 9th and 10th. And that was our first session. We went through immunotherapy and chemotherapy, was able to get through with 4 rounds. And that was diagnosed through not only the Mayo Clinic out in Arizona, but also through the White Sox helping to facilitate getting CAT scans and biopsies and all this other stuff. So I just want to really reach out to thank the White Sox organization for everything that they were able to do. I don't think it would have been as quick of a process if I wasn't able to kind of lean on those guys. I want to thank all of you media people for kind of respecting my wife and I's privacy. It was obviously trying times for us, but we really appreciate the fact that it was a hello in the hallway or little things like that, and it was no kind of prying, no trying to do anything like that, which we really appreciate because, as you can imagine, it was not exactly the best times of our lives. But, hey, it's another thing we step towards and move forward. And as of now, I've got a clean bill of health. I'm currently in remission, and I will be starting my rehab assignment in Gwinnett on Friday, and I leave tomorrow for that. So I've had a couple games in Arizona getting my legs under me, realizing that the bullpen is a lot further away than I remembered it last year. and also, like, before we – it was all discovered because of some lumps in my neck. I found a lump on here, which now there's a scar right there, a lump on my back of my neck, the side and here, that were the main triggers. I told our training staff that they came around June. I didn't tell anybody till July. I got a blood test done and nothing came up, which is fun that blood cancer doesn't come up in the blood, which is great. But everything that the White Sox did for me was huge and has definitely contributed to being able to be back as soon as I have been and moving forward with this kind of this path forward.
Liam, you've gone through this journey and you've dealt with a lot of things. Has this changed your perspective on life itself?
Not particularly. I think I've always had I've never really had a life is short or anything like that, but I mean, since my kind of career turnaround in 2019, 2018, I haven't changed my mindset. It's always been a positive next day is what we're going to do. It's never been a look to the future. It's been taking care of today, and I don't think that's really changed. But I think actually that was a contributing factor that really helped me attack everything with this. Like treatments 1 and 3 were the hardest for me. Treatments 2 and 4 were a lot easier, but it was those days where you're just on the couch, not being able to move too much, that kind of really, that was the days you needed to dig deep. Those are the days where you needed to find that positive mental attitude and the aptitude and moving forward. That was, that hasn't really changed my outlook on life, but it's definitely made me miss being in this clubhouse. It's definitely made me miss being a part of the team and being around and quote unquote, keeping Tim in his place.
Liam, you were in spring training. We heard you were throwing bullpens already, which seemed remarkable. Are you pushing the envelope there? Is that normal? And how were you able to do that and do the things that you've been doing physically at the pace you're working at?
So I got very lucky in the fact that my doctor was a former collegiate gymnast who then went through leukemia herself. So she was very understanding of the athletic way of doing things. Unfortunately, as anybody who's had anything to do with cancer or anything like this, it is a very, very scientific. Everything is done based upon research. Everything is based upon this. So there was no guidelines on bullpens. There was no guidelines on athletic endeavors. There was no guidelines on that because they've never really been able to do a case study on enough people to get some relevant data. But for me, it was, and her was, as long as you throw, as long as you feel okay doing it, as long as you recover fine doing it, she goes, I have no problem with it. But if you feel anything, you have to be cognizant of how your body feels. So luckily, I didn't feel anything other than the usual pain that I'm used to. So, it was definitely, I was pushing it to see how far I could go. But in saying that, I was responding well. And if I wasn't responding well, I wouldn't have been able to do as much as I did.
What is your physical strength level like now in terms of
It's very hard to gauge because I don't lift, so I don't know my physical strength. But throwing wise, I feel great. I've been long tossing pretty much consistently, other than the treatment week, and then a couple days after that, just to make sure I wasn't rushing back after a week off throwing every time. But other than that, I was long tossing pretty much the entire time. I was throwing bullpens, other than the week and the next week. I was Tuesday, Friday, so got probably more bullpens than most of the guys back there just because I wasn't allowed to get in the game because James wouldn't let me. If he's here. That's Kruk, by the way. James Kruk wouldn't let me.
Do you have any setbacks from the treatments that you've been through, and what do you foresee your time frame in joining the team?
Yeah, I mean, setbacks were every treatment session. I had treatment on Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, I was pretty much catatonic on the couch. Friday, I'd make sure to come to the field and move around a little bit, but then it's kind of you take 4 days off from throwing, and then it was the slow ramp, like the couple days ramp up before I could get back into it again. That was mainly the setbacks baseball wise. Health wise, I'm not a breakfast person, so I had to eat breakfast while I was taking all the medication for the anti-nausea and the things to boost my immune system, and then the pills to make sure that I didn't have bone pain and all this sort of stuff. So the medications, I had to eat a lot regularly. So I ended up gaining a little bit of weight, which was a better alternative than what I was expecting. I was so worried about losing weight that I gained 15 pounds. So, now it's, that was a setback, but, that was it really. I was lucky in the fact of, I got told, hey, the more you move, the more water you drink, the more kind of you stay active, it's better in the long run because you become and you start not like you start getting used to moving around a little bit, where if you sit on the couch, you start getting used to sitting on the couch, you'll just feel worse. So moving around and able to get on like the Peloton and all that sort of stuff and go to the field and just kind of keep that exercise going, being outside, that was a big thing. I did notice that I get sunburned a lot easier, which is bad for me because I got sunburned the hell of a lot as it was, just because you get a little bit more sensitive to the sun. But other than that, yeah, it wasn't too bad, and luckily I was able to kind of get on the mound and get everything flowing. So right now I'm in somewhat of a February. It's obviously now I'm just trying to ramp up and then get this thing going, but We have a timeline in place. It's just a matter of how it goes and how I feel getting into games and now having to adjust to a pitch clock that I haven't kind of haven't used yet. But it's those little things that we have a plan in place, but nothing set in stone because it all depends on how I recover and how I go.
Hey, Liam, you mentioned the stress this can be on the spouse. How important was your wife in terms of, you know, you coming back and beating this thing?
I could never say how much she did for me, ever. Being there every day, especially the first few rounds of treatment, because they were the hardest on me physically, and being a spouse, sitting next to your husband while he's motion sensors, while he's sitting on, like, lying in a hospital bed, writhing in pain, not being able to do anything. I don't think I'd ever be able to understand or have that side of that kind of hurt going through. But driving to and from every treatment, driving to and from every test, she was moving by my side every single step of the way. Kicking me when I needed to be kicked to get out and do something and get active, telling me to slow it down when I'm doing too much because I don't know any other way. I don't think I'll ever be able to thank her enough. I don't think I'll ever be able to show my gratitude enough. I don't think I'll ever be able to do anything that even comes close to what she was able to do for me throughout this. And that's something that, I mean, I've already been in love with her for 15 years. Going through that, I don't think it's, you could have made our bond stronger throughout it because of just everything going on. And yeah, I also want to thank her friends for being around her. People don't understand, like a lot of people don't understand. Yeah, it's tough on the person who has it, but it's harder on the spouse because you're helpless. You're sitting there without any way of helping, without any way of fixing anything. So I want to thank a lot of these guys. Their wives reached out to Christy, and that was, I think that probably helped more than anything with her.
All right, that was Liam Hendricks a couple days ago at Guaranteed Rate Field. If you didn't hear it live, played you a good chunk there, some good stuff, some emotional stuff, and it's all good news because he's back on the baseball diamond. Sox fans, join us for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Starting at only $19, this offer includes one ticket and two beers to new and expanded seating locations across the ballpark. Must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. So that was Liam Hendricks. Next up, the Director of Youth Services for the White Sox, Michael Huff. We'll talk about youth baseball coming up this summer, and the White Sox play on the field as well. Stay tuned. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max weekdays at 5 a.m. ESPN Chicago.
Back on White Sox Weekly, Jesse Rogers with you. Join us at the ballpark on Saturday, May 20th, as the White Sox take on the Kansas City Royals. The first 20,000 fans will receive a White Sox track jacket presented by Xfinity. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Back with you here, White Sox Weekly. We'll talk to Mike Huff in just a moment. One game has gone final that involves an AL Central team, and that is the Detroit Tigers. They beat the St. Louis Cardinals 6-5 in 10 innings. All of a sudden, Detroit is just a couple games under 500, 15-17. I feel like ever since Javi Baez forgot how many outs there were on the base paths, that woke up the whole team. And they've played some pretty good baseball, 15-17 for the Detroit Tigers. And I saw Spencer Torkelson make a hell of a play. The runner was on second in the 10th inning, and the batter leading off the inning pulled a ball to the right side, hard hit ball to the first baseman, and he fired to third to get the runner out there, and that really set up the rest of the inning for Detroit as they won 6-5. That was a great play by Torkelson. You rarely see a first baseman throw to third. I want to ask Mike Huff right off the bat. I mean, what a play that was, because, Mike, I don't see many first basemen throw out a runner from second to third leading off an inning like that. That's a hell of a heads-up play, isn't it, by Spencer Torkelson?
I would totally agree, Jess. That's an incredible play, and typically, you don't have a first baseman that's A, that agile enough, or B, that forward thinking. That, again, if the ball's hit to me this way, what am I doing it with my body? Am I going to second, or am I now going to go to third because I know I've got no chance to get back to the base for a double play, and I have a pitcher who might be falling off the mound to third base, so he has no chance. So I think just the pre-thinking of what are the situations if the ball's hit to me in different directions, like you said, very unique and a heck of a play, and you're right, Detroit is playing pretty good baseball.
It's such a good example, as we're talking to Mike Huff, Director of Youth Baseball for the White Sox, for young players. You said it, the pre-thinking, the prep before the pitch is thrown. When I coached my son and teams that he was on, I tried to drill that. Think about, this is how the game isn't boring for play. You know, it can be boring for the parents watching, but for the players on the field, if you're constantly thinking, it's not a boring game, right? Because before the play, you have to think, if it's hit to my left, if it's hit to my right, if it's hit right at me, if it's hit soft, if it's hit hard. And there's no doubt in my mind Spencer Torkelson was thinking exactly that. If it's hit hard in this area, I'm going to third base with it. And it wasn't even the easiest of plays. I don't know if you saw it, but it was a ground ball. You know, he had to turn and make the throw to third. There's no doubt that was preparation.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when my years with the White Sox, a little bit with the Blue Jays, but more with the White Sox, with Lance typically in center and Tim Raines or myself, or, you know, like a Danny Pasqua, even a Sammy Sosa in 91, I mean, we were constantly saying to each other between pitches, you know, ground ball, we're going here, fly ball, we're going here, ball in front, we're doing this, ball behind us, we're doing that, to the point that we would be talking between pitches even. And again, if an Alex Fernandez was just on, even if the reports that we're playing the guy straight up, if he's strike one, strike two, Lance has given me a whistle like, hey, I'm going over this way. I need you to follow me, because Alex is just overwhelming these guys. So to your point, what we try to teach our kids that are playing on our travel teams, the elite stuff, what we try to work with the coaches, with the little leagues when we're out doing instruction that way is, again, make these kids understand that they should never just be standing around. They should always be communicating with each other. They should always be thinking in the game, so that, A, it keeps them involved as much as the coaches.
Absolutely. My daughter plays softball, and I can only imagine if she's thinking about TikTok or is she thinking about the next play. I don't know. I don't know. So I'm trying to get her to think softball 24/7, or at least when she's on the field. Visiting with Mike Huff, Director of Youth Baseball for the White Sox. All right, parents, you can go to whitesox.com/play. Click on the campus icon to find the interactive map that'll show you where a youth camp is near you. So tell me more about the youth camps. School is almost out. We're not quite there, Mike, but the camps will start up as soon as the summer hits. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, exactly. Starting the second week in June, going through the third week in August, we're going to be in 54 camps, about 45 locations, a couple locations because they sell out so quickly, we do two camps there. But it's a four-day event, either mornings or afternoons, only $159. The kids are going to get hats, shirts, whole bunch of White Sox tchotchke stuff. They're also going to get some tickets to a game. And what we try to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is progressively build on a lot of the very basics, absolutes. So even if you're a Cub fan, you know, you can bring your kid out there. We'll still teach them. But from Monday, just basic ground balls, fly balls, throwing, catching, hitting, to then Tuesday, getting a little bit layer down in the onion, to then Wednesday, a little bit more if the kids are demonstrating they understand what we've been doing Monday, Tuesday. And Wednesday we start to incorporate some games. And then Thursday is pretty minimal instruction, and almost exclusively we do a baseball Olympics and we have games, and the kids, you know, all seem to have a blast and a big smile on their face by the time they're leaving.
That's awesome. So it's all within a four-day period. You do all of this, and I bet kids come away with that thinking, okay, look, I know I'm not going to turn into a Major League Baseball player in 4 days, but just a complete better understanding of how to go about their business to get better throughout the rest of the summer.
Exactly right. And I would add to that, I cannot tell you how many parents come back on Thursdays or Wednesdays and just say thank you, because we almost expect the kids, not almost, we do. We have the kids doing homework each night. We have them going home, taking a picture or drawing a picture of their favorite player, favorite number, favorite team. We've got them thinking when they're away from the field about baseball stuff. But then we also challenge, especially the older kids. Again, just 5 through 12-year-olds, but usually those 10, 11, 12s, we're challenging them to teach their parents what they've been taught. And if they do and they come back, here's a pack of baseball cards. And obviously one of the neat things being the White Sox, we get a lot of baseball cards, so we can hand out a whole lot of cards to the kids at the camps. But by Wednesday, Thursday, when the parents are dropping them off, picking them up, I hear more and more of the parents saying thank you that, you know, they didn't realize they were teaching their kid how to throw a baseball the wrong way and that their kid was teasing them for not doing it the right way. And that, again, just huge smile on my face. And when we see these kids and these families coming to a game, it's always fun to see them up in the kid zone or around in the outfield.
Visiting with Mike Huff, director of youth baseball for the White Sox and former player. Now I'm going to put you on the spot, Mike. The White Sox are 11-22. There are probably some things you're teaching the kids that the Major League Baseball team can learn from. I think that, you know, we talk about controllables and non-controllables, like there's things out of your control sometimes, but I feel like fundamentals on defense is something even a, you know, Major League Baseball player can't control. And I'd like to see the White Sox tighten up defensively where they can. You can't ask someone to do something they can't do. But that, I feel like, is a little bit controllable. Am I off base there? Is that something you'd like to see watching some of these games? Like, let's tighten up that area because we know hitting is, you know, comes and goes, but good defense can always last and get you far if you play it well.
No, I think you're singing to the choir to a guy who got to play 7 years in the majors primarily because of his defensive prowess, not offensive prowess. And again, what we try to teach the kids, and just as you're talking about, the defense is all a mental component. Are you mentally in the game? You just went 0-for-4, but now it's the eighth inning. Are you taking a hit away from the other team? Are you thinking ahead to make sure you turn a double play on any type of situations, or are you still thinking about the line drive with guys on second and third, two outs that didn't bring anybody in, or the strikeout that obviously was a ball but you got called out on strikes? So, you know, as you said, there are certain parts of the game that you can control, and defense is one of those, and the mental approach is one of those. Sometimes a pitcher just throws a great slider. Sometimes you see it's something out of his hand, and you swear it's one pitch, and by the time you start swinging it, now it's moving, and it's a double play instead of a sac fly. I mean, those things sometimes are out of your control. But the defense, yeah, and I would agree. I think the thing that's been frustrating for me, I know talking to some of my coaches, are when the White Sox have that mental lapse or that mental breakdown that it kind of frustrates us, A, as a fan, B, being an employee of the White Sox, but C, because we know the next practice we go to, there's going to be kids and parents asking us, don't you teach us something different than what we just saw on TV?
Exactly. Well said, Mike. Before I let you go, and I'll give a plug to the website again in a moment here.
Thank you.
Yeah, tell me about your thoughts as you watch Liam Hendricks return to baseball. I mean, you have a different perspective than myself and other fans. It's one thing to recover from anything from Tommy John to a twisted ankle, right? I mean, that's different. But the uncertainty of cancer in terms of your everyday life, you know, you want to live your life and live a long life. And then also getting back into baseball shape so quickly, it's mind-boggling what he went through. I want to get a former player's perspective on Liam's return.
Yeah, I think mind-boggling is a great expression. You can focus mentally on beating a disease, something as challenging as a leukemia or a cancer, but to combine that with keeping your body in that type of top physical condition, going through that and being able in such a short period of time to actually go out and perform at a AAA level, we know he's going to be in the majors relatively quickly. It's such a wonderful story on so many different levels that, again, I hope most people can take a step back and appreciate this. I think Liam said something very cute that when he went out to pitch in Charlotte, that he goes out and he tries to pitch angry. And as he got on the mound and was announced, both teams like stood up and applauded him for what he's doing. And he's like looking at the opposition, like, don't be nice. Don't be clapping for me. I need to get you out and I want to be angry at you. And so he has to now go through things mentally that are different than he's ever gone through before. And again, as we all know, we hear the story that the person that's going through the cancer, they sometimes can manage the whole process better because they're doing it. It's all the support people, the wife, the kids, the parents, that as much as they can give support, they really have no control on this. So I love how he gives his wife so much credit, and I think it's going to be so exciting for the White Sox when he comes back. And I think that, you know, the way they're starting to play now, you know, again, hoping that we get healthier, hoping that, you know, the mental component is there. But I think when he comes back, that could be the boost that, you know, we may see a 10-0 run instead of an 0-10 run.
Well said. I mean, the emotional lift is going to be huge, but just think about the bullpen. It changes the dynamic back there. Of course, he has to perform at that high level, and I know he expects that he will be. Mike Huff, Director of Youth Baseball for the White Sox. People can go to whitesox.com/play, and again, click on the camps icon, find the interactive map. There are camps all over the place, including in the city, downtown, and you'll find the camp near you and sign up. $159 for 4 days of great instruction. Mike, we wish you a great, great, productive summer.
Thank you, Jess. Have a good one yourself.
All right, talk to you soon. That's Mike Huff right here on White Sox Weekly. Final segment or two coming up before the pregame show. I'll have the pregame for you. White Sox and Reds, first pitch at 5:40. Connor McKnight, Darren Jackson on the call. I've got the pregame show for you in about 15 minutes. Stay tuned. This is White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
We're back on White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers sitting in for Connor McKnight. He's got the play-by-play. He'll be back next Saturday for White Sox Weekly. We do it 2 hours before every game, every Saturday in season, 1 hour out of season. But so right now it's 2 hours every Saturday before the pregame show, which this week starts at 5. We've got first pitch at 5:40. Darren Jackson alongside Connor McKnight. Hey, students, it's easier than ever to get your friends together for a White Sox game. Sign up for student steal alerts and get exclusive access to lower-level ticket offers starting at just $9. For more information, visit whitesox.com/student or text student to 244-769. One final segment here, and I want to get to something positive that's been going on in the White Sox bullpen because not a lot has gone right down there. Gregory Santos is a newcomer, off to a good start. Now, some of the outline numbers, a little scary. He's pitched 16 innings, given up 19 hits and 5 walks. That's a whip of 1.44. That's not great. You don't want to see that trend continue. But within those 16 innings, he struck out 17, and that's what you need, late inning ability to strike out players. Here's Pedro Grifol on Gregory Santos.
You know, we acquired him because we thought that there was the possibility of a really good sinker at high velocity, right? And that was the focus in spring training. And that credit goes to him for believing in it, and to Ethan and Haas for and to our guys up top, identifying a guy that with a power arm that was probably throwing 60% sliders, you know, and was throwing four seam fastballs. And, you know, so when you do something like that, you obviously can't just, you know, he makes our team. You obviously can't get him to the big leagues here and just throw him in leverage. So there's a development process here in the big leagues too, you know, and he's a part of it, and he's still developing. But the last 4 or 5 outings, I mean, that sinker's starting to play, and it's starting to play at high velocity. And he's got that slider that he throws for strikes, and the reason he throws for strikes is he threw it probably 60% of the time, you know, in other places. So he's becoming a guy, you know, he's becoming a guy, but he's developing too. You know, there's a lot of things he's got to work on, you know, and today he got tested, you know, tested with his PFPs. He got, you know, so it's a work in progress with him, but he's starting to pitch more leverage. Absolutely. You know, if his sinker plays like that and he can throw a slider for strikes, I don't see why we don't pitch him in leverage. I'm comfortable with him in leverage.
They need to find another leverage guy, no doubt about it, at least until Liam Hendricks comes back. I mentioned that 1.44 whip, little high, but his ERA, 1.62, is a little low. So he's been stranding runners. That's fine. He's got a live arm. I think he's a guy that will pitch in more high leverage. All right. That's going to do it for White Sox Weekly. I want to thank you for listening. Thanks to Charlie Bevins, Kevin Zeback, and our executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley, for producing today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back in about 4 minutes for the official pregame show as the White Sox take on the Reds. You've been listening to White Sox Weekly right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network.